chance to have a dream, to open and run a bakery. But they took a chance, took the sweets to the street. Now they all have places where I'd love to eat.
Hello there, bakeroos and bakerettes. Welcome to the Rise Up Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Dick, and this is the show about bakers and bakeries and bakery owners and all the folks that work so hard, often through the night, to make the good stuff and share it with the people in their community. How are you this week? So great to be talking to you. This is going to be an extra special, awesome show because this week I am talking to Kitty and Alex Tate, the daughter and father team that is the Orange Bakery in Watlington, UK, in Oxfordshire. Yeah, they are also the co-authors of really the best baking cookbook, baking book that I've read this year. It's called Bread Song, and it is fantastic. And I'm going to talk about that in a little bit too. So lots of fun going on today. Before that, how are you doing? Been a couple of weeks away, and I apologize for that. Been kind of busy. It's been weird. Our daughter Robin was over for a visit. She flew from the UK here and spent a week with us. When Robin comes to visit, we eat out. That's the way it is. She's like, I'm on holiday, so we need to go to brunch and we need to go out for supper and we need to go for burgers. And Dad, you can pay, all right? Is that okay? So yeah, so did that for a week. I didn't even have to buy groceries after she left because the fridge was still full of food we had already bought plus leftovers. So we're eating out of the fridge this week. But it was great to see her. It was a lovely autumn season out on Vancouver Island while she was here. So we went out to beaches and went out to the forest and stuff. And it was very, very nice. And it was great to see her. I feel very privileged this year that I get to see my daughter twice in the same year after COVID, not seeing her at all for a couple of years. So that was good. And I've been working. That's another thing. Yeah, I actually got myself a job. I am working part-time as a prep baker at a coffee shop that I really like in town here in Victoria that do all their own baking. And so I'm working just a couple of mornings a week helping them out. They were short-staffed. And I said, well, if you're short-staffed, I can pitch in because I like the place. And the two sisters that own it are lovely. And so, yeah, so I've been doing that, mixing scones and mixing cookies and scooping and all of that stuff. So that's been good. I have to say it's so nice to be back working out face to face with people again. It's been a long time working with the Zoom screen. And so I just got back from a little 4-hour shift this morning. And, you know, I'm just standing at the table, mixing scones, scooping scones, freezing scones, baking scones, the whole thing. And it's just endless, this line of people coming through and buying coffee and buying pastries and that kind of thing. And it was just nice to be around them. I have workmates. I have Matt, who stands to the left of me and says absolutely nothing, really, is because he's working the line making breakfast sandwiches and bacon and eggers and all of that stuff. And then Dan is on my right. I never got a chance to really talk with him yet, although he talks more because he says, behind you and hot oven and watch out and all that stuff, because I'm standing kind of in front of the oven and he's working the oven, you know, cooking off bacon for sandwiches or prepping vegetables and that kind of thing. So it's sort of the three of us working silently and efficiently, which is what I love to do, and watching all the people go by and nodding and smiling and that kind of thing. So it's fun. Yeah, so I've done that a couple of times so far. I'm going to be doing it a bit more throughout the week. And it's remarkably fun. It's been a long time since I've been baking in any level of production. I'm more of a bread guy, and that's sort of where my skills are, but I can do this stuff and I like it. It's flour, right? It's all the good ingredients and they make a really good product. And so it's fun to be a part of that. And what else is going on? Let's see. Oh, hey, I should make a plug right now for you. If you're new to the show, maybe you're just listening to the show because you're friends with Kitty and Alex, which is awesome. Welcome. But in addition to this podcast, which, you know, we're up over 175 episodes now, and they all exist on riseuppod.com. We also have a community for bakers and bakery owners, and it's called bakersforbakers.org. That's bakers with the number 4, bakers.org. And it's an online forum. It's free to sign up and join. This week, it's been hopping again with questions, whether it's, you know, yeast has gone bad, or questions about pastries, or questions about equipment. Or you could be Stephen Knight, and you just graduated from the Bread Bakers Guild of America Certified Baker Program, and you just wrote the test, and he passed it, and he was very, very excited about that. And so wrote a summary of the whole process and what he went through and how much he enjoyed it and how much he learned from going through this baking certification process. And that's there on Bakers for Bakers as well. So you can check all that out. All you have to do is head over there, bakersforbakers.org, sign up. It's free to join and join the community. Introduce yourself, get to meet some other bakers from all over the world, ask questions, give help when you can, get help when you need, that whole thing. And it's a neat place. And the community there is very supportive. It's a kinder, gentler online forum with good information. And that, and this show, is all 100% listener supported. It's folks like you that like the show and want to pitch in. All you have to do is go to riseuppod.com, press the button that says support the show, and you can leave us a little donation. Give me a tip. You can sign up. A lot of folks sign up for a small monthly donation. If you buy me a cup of coffee a month, it all adds up and keeps this show going and keeps all the tech paid for. it's fall and all of my annual subscriptions for the different technology components are all coming due at the same time. So I am extra super grateful for the regular donors that support the show every month. I really do appreciate you. Thank you so much. Okay. On to this week's show with Kitty and Alex. Now, I first heard about them because Cindy got the book Bread Song, which is their book that they just wrote, and brought it home and was reading it and says, you really need to read this book. There's some good stories in here. And I said, okay, yeah, I will. And then a couple days later, she says, have you read it yet? And I said, okay, I will. And then it was one Sunday. I sat down and I started reading it. And honest to goodness, I read the first 2/3 of the book, which is like the story part of the book, in 2 sittings. I had to get up and take a break and make myself another cup of tea and a snack. And then I sat down and I just devoured the whole thing, because these two folks, Kitty and Alex, daughter and father, started baking because they kind of had to. They needed a way to help Kitty out, tried a bunch of things. Bread baking was the thing that really captured her imagination, and they ran with it, and she ran with it, and she dug in, and she met folks and learned the craft of working with other bakers, and started baking small out of the house and got bigger and bigger. And now they have their own bakery in their village of Watlington in the UK, and it's going gangbusters. The book itself is so well written, and the stories are so well told, where Kitty will write for a bit, and then Alex will write for a bit, and then back and forth, talking about how much baking means to them, how much their community means to them, and the evolution of the Orange Bakery. After I read it, it's like, I have to meet these folks. I would love to talk with them. And so we get into it. We talk about their journey in baking. Since the book's come out, they've got new projects, and we talk about that as well. And it's a lot of fun. So here we go, with Kitty and Alex Tate of the Orange Bakery in Watlington, Oxfordshire, UK. Oh my gosh. So are you at home? Is that?
We are, yeah. So it's nearly our bedtime, actually. So we get up early tomorrow.
I've been doing the time zone calculations. It's like, okay, I wonder what their Monday's like to do this on Monday evening and stuff. And so,
actually, no, Monday's pretty good for us because,
Monday's our Sunday, basically.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then tomorrow is back to work. Yeah. So,
and how are you?
Doing well. I live out on the West Coast in Canada, and we've had a pretty bad drought all summer and got our first rains just over the weekend. And so everything is like fresh and it looks a little greener and stuff. And so, yeah, so it's nice.
I love that smell when it hasn't rained for a really long time. And it's like when rain hits the dust, and it smells so fresh.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Our daughter lives in England. She lives in Kent, actually, and she was out to visit. She just left yesterday. And so we were taking her out into the forests and mountains and stuff, and it was really dry and everything was looking kind of dusty. And then after the rain, we went out again, and it was like I wanted to show her in autumn. So yeah. Oh. So it was nice.
Where is she based in Kent?
Mm. Well, she teaches English in Canterbury at a high school, or like like year 7, 8, 9, and 10 is kind of what she teaches.
Yeah.
And then lives in Broadstairs right on the coast.
Oh, so, lovely. Wow. Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she's living her dream out there. And
how often does she get to come back to you?
Well, it's only been twice since she moved. She's been there. This is her fourth year teaching, and she left just before COVID. And so we didn't get to see her for a long time. And then she came at last Christmas, and then just came out this week. And we were actually out there this summer to see her as well. So we were out in August. And so, so it's been nice. And now it's going to be a while for both of us, because with airfares and stuff, we're both going to be like trying to repay these trips we took, you know.
Does it feel very strange without
her? Right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When she moved out, she was 22. She just graduated university and left home for the first time to London. And so it was like, it was very strange. Mm-hmm. You know, I have friends here that they're talking about, you know, helping the kids pack up and move and get their new apartment set up, you know, when they leave home or whatever. And we took her to the airport with two big suitcases and just cried. So yeah. It was like, you know, that's, and did a lot of FaceTiming for a long time. And now it's sort of like, if we don't talk to her for 2 weeks, we just know she's doing all right. So it's
Yeah.
Does she have a sort of, not a wanderlust, but I mean, does living and experiencing life away from Canada, has that always been a dream for her?
Well, so we grew up in Saskatchewan, or like I was born and raised in Saskatchewan. So in the middle of the prairies in Canada, and it's a smaller city where we lived, and kind of very conservative in their views and stuff. And that was never for her. She was always going to go to the big city, you know, and I always figured it was going to be Toronto or Vancouver or something like that. But she did a couple high school Europe trips and went to London, and she's a theater person. Like, she loves the theater. And so when they were recruiting for teachers in the UK, and she was like, oh, I could, you know, once in a while take the train into London and go to a show. Mm-hmm. She was all over that. And she really, really likes it there now. So I don't think she's going to be a travel the world person, but I can see her staying in England for a long time. Yeah.
Yeah. Is she holding on to her accent?
Yeah.
It's funny. She's got two now. So very, very Canadian when we're talking with her, but we'll be on FaceTime like this, and she'll turn and talk to her roommate. And all of a sudden she's got this accent, and it's like,
basically bilingual.
Yeah. In a way. Yeah. Cause you know, what is this crisps business and what, you know, that kind of thing. And when we picked her up,
trousers.
Yeah. Trousers. Oh yeah. You don't say pants. You know, you talk about trousers and stuff. And so we're learning that, and everything's well, good out that way. So I'm picking that up. But when she flew home, and she had a stopover in Calgary. And as soon as we picked her up at the airport, she was like, I'm just surrounded by hockey players again. It's like, what's going on? Everybody talks like they're at the rink at the Calgary airport. And stuff. So I laughed about that, you know? Yeah.
I've just been in America. Realized American is very different to British. I would say something, and then I'd have to translate it into American.
Yeah. And I think the Canadian, I'll put a plug in for Canada, in that same thing. We'll it's the American words for the most part, but we actually understand what you're talking about more. Cause I think it's cause we get a lot more BBC shows on TV here.
In the middle ground.
Yeah. So you pick it up.
You're our translators.
That's right. Yeah. So what, and so where were you in America?
So I was in Portland, Oregon.
And
I was working there for about a month at the end, and living in a hostel and working for a food bank, teaching them how to make bread, and then teaching like the community how to make bread, and then also like turning their waste food into baked goods and products.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah. So I loved it. I had a really amazing time.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds so fascinating. I assumed you were doing a stage over there or something, but that's...
No, like I've loved staging, but recently I realized that even though I love baking, what's really important to me is feeding people.
Sure.
So I've loved staging, and I've staged all around in like London and Copenhagen and Paris, but actually like this time I didn't want to stage. I wanted to feed people and do something out of my comfort zone.
Wow. So how did you find out about that you'd go to Portland to do that work?
So there's this amazing Portland chef who I follow, and she does incredible Vietnamese food. Okay. And I saw that she was teaching some classes with them one day, so I looked into them, and I'm in the process at the moment of setting up my own like for purpose business, and I really wanted to see how other for purpose businesses worked. So I just reached out to them, and what I really liked is, even though yes, they're not baking bread or anything, but what they had the same principles as me, which is they just wanted to empower other people to make food and to have food. So I went over and I got chatting, and I went over, and then I was just making banana bread and things like that. I'd make like 200 banana muffins for school kids, or I'd teach a class of bread making to reoffenders and things like that. So it was amazing. I really loved it. And I taught everyone in the team how to teach bread making. So it means that they can keep teaching the community now I'm gone.
Oh, that's fascinating. We're going to hop all over the place here. But I'm really curious about this idea of a for-purpose business that you're starting. Help me understand what that means to you, to set up a for-purpose business.
So this business is basically, like I said, I love baking, but more importantly, I love feeding people. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I got baking was because I wanted to enable everyone to have good bread. So I started to make these packs, and these packs have flour, salt, and yeast in. All people have to do is add water. It's no knead, no mess. So you add water, you stir it up, you leave it for like 8 to 24 hours, and then the next day you scoop it out, and you can make anything with it, like focaccia, loaves, flatbreads, pizza, you name it. So I made 200 of these kits, and I sent them out to people on Instagram who'd never tried making bread before, and they all tried them and loved them. So I really got thinking, like, oh, okay, this could work. So then I did 1,000 kits, which I didn't make myself, which I got a really great manufacturer to produce. And we've been alongside our breadjucation classes, is what we call them. We've been teaching food banks and schools and community groups. And then we're going to do a run of 50,000 kits in February.
Oh, my gosh. Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, well, and you, it sounds like you've really got this idea of, okay, I'm going to teach the teachers, like by working with food banks, working with different community groups, I'll teach the teachers, and then they can teach others.
Exactly.
And spreading it out.
Exactly. You got it so quickly. That's exactly it. Because I know that there's only so much I can bake myself, and there's so many people I can teach myself. But if I teach people who can teach, especially people who are already teaching in food education programs, so like lots of food hubs or community kitchens, we already have people teaching how to make cakes, so if I can teach them, it means that it can carry on the tradition and it can really spread.
Oh, for sure.
And everyone we teach also gets supplied with free kits, so you can give them away to their students and things like that.
Oh, that's really neat. It combines a couple of things that I've noticed. Years ago, long before Cindy and I opened up our own bakery, I served on a board and it was called the Regina Home Economics for Living Project, but it was the same kind of thing you're teaching. Mm-hmm. It was retired home economics teachers got together and were running cooking classes and that kind of thing around the city, helping people out. But I'll make a note to put you in touch with it's Sarah's Breads in the States. I talked with her just last year, and she's doing a similar thing with the bread kits and making these little boxes and promoting those and getting them out in the community as well. And she was a professional baker for, you know, 20 years, and then started getting into these teaching more and doing the kits. But
that would be brilliant. I would love that. Yeah.
Although I have to say, when I read your book, I was a little bit intimidated just by how well connected you are very quickly. Like I think I know folks, you know people, my gosh.
I think I've been really, really lucky, especially with Instagram.
Yeah.
Because even though it can be toxic for a lot of teenagers, for me, it's been amazing because I've been able to do exactly that. I've been able to connect to people. And bakers are a certain breed of people that so kind and open and willing to help. So I've been able to learn how to, because I've never had any training, I've learned how to bake through stages, and the stages have been working with bakers like Hart Bungeri and stuff like that, and 10 Bells in Paris, and I've loved that, but I've learned so much from the bakers there. So I'm very lucky. Not me at all.
Yeah, it's something that I tapped into a little bit when we had our retail bakery, but then really noticed a couple of years after, because we had the retail bakery 2010 to 2015. And so Instagram kind of started in the middle of that, you know?
Yeah.
It was like email chat rooms and email lists and stuff where I met the people when I got started. And then it just kind of took off. And after we closed the bakery and I was doing the solo thing, you just kind of noticed it. It was like, that's where people were coming, because, you know, we make such a visual product, right? Mm-hmm. That it's like, yes. Yeah, everybody was there. But I, that's been my experience as well, Kitty, is just like the baking community is so generous in terms of, like, I find Instagram can be toxic even as an adult in a lot of areas, but I don't feel that as much on the baking side. It's much more like we're here to help each other.
You're so right. We're here to help, but also we're also passionate about the same thing. It doesn't matter what community you come from, what language you speak, what your culture is. We're all passionate about making bread and giving people good bread. And that's really it's really powerful, is finding you as a community.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So with all of that, with the kits and the teaching and that kind of thing, what's the state of Orange Bakery now? What's going on with that?
Well, good question. So at the moment we're balancing the two together, quite happily. So it's just Kitty and I who do the Orange Bakery. We've got a brilliant guy called Max who comes and helps us on a couple of days, but it's just us two. But we'll just see what happens with this project. I mean, I think it's really exciting seeing the doors that are opening.
We never plan too much out. If we can do both, we're doing both.
Basically,
and then there'll be a point that we know we can't do both. But that won't mean the end of the bakery. It might mean that we go down to a couple days or one day or whatever. But we'll never stop baking because we love it.
And it's so important to us to sort of experiment and to share and to sort of feed our community. But we do a lot of retrospective planning. So a lot of our ideas sort of, you know, we're not sure where they're going to go. And it's only in the future that
we've got this motto, which is ready, fire, aim.
Right.
Basically, we go for it and then we kind of aim in which direction we need to go.
Well, I think you have to say yes to things at the start. And at least if you're willing to say no later, but at least you can say yes and give it a go and see how it goes. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I find when I'm saying no to too many things, I sort of have to take stock of that and say, okay, what's going on here? That is it a fear thing, or is it just am I actually busy? And usually it's more of a fear thing, and then I start saying yes again.
Yeah, that's really interesting, actually.
Yeah.
Just take things down a level in terms of why you make the decision that you're doing.
Totally. Yeah. Totally. Yeah, because a lot of folks talk about, well, you know, if you have that one thing that you're super passionate about, say no to everything else so you can focus on it. But I don't know. There's something to be said for at least considering it, giving it a try, right? Like, we used to get all kinds of special requests at the bakery for, traditional breads that weren't our tradition.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, never had it before.
Once they find that you're a baker, you know, and it's like any kind of craftsperson, it's like, well, my grandmother used to make this. Can you make it? Mm. Or I was traveling in Mexico and we had this thing. Can you figure out how to make it here? And it was like, okay, like we'll give it a try. You know, might not go on the menu, but we'll try it once for sure. Yeah. Mm.
We did the exact same. We made like a Polish wedding bread the other day for someone. Yeah.
What was it like?
So it's like a normal, it's like a almost like kind of an enriched dough, but then mm-hmm. all of that pattern on top. So it normally has like the couple's initials printed on and things like that. So you have to make a separate dough,
yep.
mold onto the dough. But it actually went quite well. Yeah, we were quite chuffed.
Wow.
But it was a really lovely Polish girl getting married to a really lovely Indian guy. So we added some turmeric as
yeah,
well.
We added, yeah, we and like kind of did a cauliflower yeah. ala gobi inspired.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh, you're bringing back some trauma for me. We did that at the bakery for a young woman that really loved our bread, but her mother came in and wanted it with in her case it was like little dough, like you made little doves and stuff with sort of a dead dough and put that on top and tried to keep everything to hold as the bread, you know, sprung in the oven and stuff. And it was a complete and utter disaster aesthetically, but we gave the bride a whole bunch of other bread that didn't have the decorations as well. And it's just like, here you go.
Yeah,
they don't always work. Oh, good. I'm glad it worked out for you though. That's awesome. Yeah.
Yes, but we think so. They might just be really polite. And
well, hey, you take what you can get for sure. So I'm a little bit, I'm in a weird position here because I've read your book twice. And so I kind of know the story, but I'm curious. If for folks that are listening to this, sort of you started baking, and I'm going to say in a non-traditional way, that wasn't like, hey, this is, it was a passion for you, wasn't it, Kitty?
Not planned at all.
Yeah. So how did you kind of first discover that this was the thing that really got you going?
So actually I wasn't just like a good baker growing up. Mm-hmm. I was a horrible baker growing up. Like whatever I would try and make, it would just end up a complete disaster, and my whole family would make excuses not to be around so they didn't have to eat it, like, oh, I'm leaving the house, or oh, I've just got this work to do, because I'd make like banana bread and it would be burnt on the outside and raw in the middle, which was quite impressive for such a simple bake. And then cookies, and I would get confused between a tablespoon and a teaspoon of bicarb. So they just dry out your whole mouth. And then when I was 14, I started to really struggle with my mental health.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm the youngest of three, and I'd always been a really bubbly, happy kid. But then just one day, I started to really struggle with anxiety and depression. And nothing really triggered it. I think people always want to know why, and there was never really a why. But I kept pretending like everything was okay and everything was good. But it was exhausting. And one day this mask that I'd almost like built for myself just shattered, and I couldn't function at all anymore. And my family were amazing, and they're amazing people. And my brother would try and get me into like table tennis, and my sister would try and get me into art. My mum would try and get me into gardening, just trying to just do anything to distract my mind. And whatever I try, I do it for like 30 minutes. And then I just start crying because all these thoughts in my head just felt overwhelming. But then one day I watched Dad make a loaf of bread, and it's this no need, no mess method. He mixed
the Jim Leahy method.
Flour, salt, yeast and water in a bowl, and he mixed it into a paste. I actually took the mickey out of him. I was like, that's gross. That's not going to be edible. And then he put a cloth over the top and he left it. And then the next day, he took the cloth off, and instead of this gloopy paste, there was this silky, bubbly dough. He scooped it out and he baked it into a tin loaf. And it wasn't like amazing tartine sourdough, but For me, it was just magic how he turned four simple, primitive ingredients into something so beautiful, and it made me feel safe. So I kind of just fell head over heels in love with bread baking, and I got him to teach me how he did it. And I made one loaf and another loaf, and then I started to like go into a deep dive of the tartine sourdough method, and I'd read all the books, which all the YouTube, stalking bakeries on Instagram. I then did stages in places like London. And this was when I was still 14. So these amazing bakeries in London would take me in and teach me what they knew. And then we decided to set up a subscription service. So I'd bake like 10 loaves a day, and we'd go around to different neighbors' house and drop it off in these brown paper bags. And then that kind of escalated and snowballed into pop-ups. And every Saturday we'd have a little pop-up shop, and we'd bake as much as we could. We had like a small rough go oven, and we'd bake basically like through the night. And Dad is a teacher still at this point. And then one day someone came to our pop-ups, and he just loved how the whole community, no matter what household they were from, had come to this pop-up, were queuing for this bread. And he really loved that. So he offered us a shop on the high street. Obviously, we'd have to pay rent, but he gave it to us without a lease, which meant for me at like 15 by this point, I wasn't signing up for the next 6 years of my life. But the biggest thing was we had about £200, I think, saved up from our pop-ups, which weirdly isn't enough to open a bakery.
Yeah, that's
funny, that.
Yeah, missing a few zeros there for sure.
Yeah, it really was. So we decided to crowdfund, and we crowdfunded for about £5,000. Yeah. And we hit our target in 2 days, and at the end of it, we doubled it, which was just crazy. I didn't sleep for 48 hours. It was
And like you were saying earlier, Mark, it's this sort of generosity of bakers. So so a lot of the people were local because they sort of, you know, very much a part of the community, and we were very lucky to be a part of a very special community. But a lot of people were bakers from all around the world who just sort of, yeah, had heard about Kitty or got in touch with her or knew about our story and you know, made this sort of pledge and commitment. So we've been incredibly lucky with these sort of two communities, really, the one we live in and this the one we work
in. That's a really nice way to sum it up. And then
totally get it for sure. Like it's so funny to be like, and I think that's why your story moved me so much, was because it paralleled mine, just like, you know, 30 years at least apart. But it was the same kind of thing. Like I when I started baking, I was just, you know, crawling all over YouTube looking for any videos that I could find of actual professional bakeries, you know, and how how are they doing things.
Were you starting from scratch as well?
I really did. I took a brick oven building workshop in 2004. It was kind of like the family vacation, because I'd just been baking on a pizza stone in my in my home oven, you know, and I learned how to build a brick oven from Alan Scott, who's since passed, but he was like the guy in North America for building brick ovens in a way that an unskilled person like myself could do it. So I took this weekend workshop and then built my own oven. And then I finally, so what I did when I said, okay, I think we're going to open an actual bakery here, is I went to San Francisco, to San Francisco Baking Institute for like 3 weeks of classes. And that was my training. And I joined the Bread Bakers Guild, and I got on the email list. Cause like I was saying, it was email list back in those days. Yeah. And yeah, those were the people. And there were folks in the US and there were folks in England, and there were folks across Canada that would help me via email. And then we'd get on the phone and help me figure out what to do and stuff sometimes. And I had the brick oven. And then when we opened the retail space, I ended up buying a big for me MeWe deck oven. So sort of the same size as what I think you have now, sort of like a 12 sheet.
No, but we're both very little. So everything's big for us.
And we just, I learned about Rothko's through the podcast, actually, when I started that. So when I read about the Rothko, it's like, oh, okay, I've met people on a Rothko journey now. But yeah, we didn't crowdfund or anything like that, because we did the thing that you were never supposed to do and put the house up as collateral and did it mm-hmm. that way, which I still don't.
Well, it looks like you're in a nice house now, so it must have yeah. ended up good. Well,
yeah, it worked. It worked. We didn't lose it. So that's good. But yeah, it was a lot of stress. I was stressed out more about money just because we had this big debt, right, that we were trying to pay. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was that piece by piece. And that was like your story of, I think I've got this right, that even when you opened up the shop on the high street, that was, you were still baking out of your house, right? Or out of the backyard of your house.
Yeah.
And is that still the case?
No, we moved about a year and a bit ago.
Okay.
Into used to be an old scout hut. So it was an old deserted building. Scouts had long since gone.
Although it looked like they had left it about 5 minutes ago. They're like hula hoops, bean bags.
Yeah, it's a bit like the Marie Celeste. You could still smell the scouts, but they were there. And so we moved there about, like I say, a year and a half ago. So we finally moved out of the house, which was great. I mean, the house was fantastic, but it was very hard to draw a line. Between yeah. when
you know, you'd go at 9 o'clock and you'd be like, oh, yeah. just before bed, I'm just going to quickly make this dough. I'm gonna quickly.
Yeah, it's when we closed the retail bakery, I went back to baking out of the house and, you know, where you're mixing the dough in the basement and then taking it out to the garage and, you know, and then doing all the shaping and stuff and then in the brick oven and it worked. But the house, well, and you describe it so well. It's like the house kind of is it when it's in bakery mode. I feel bad for anyone else that's living in the house, and then, you know, and you try and put it back, but you never really put it back because you have to get going.
No,
yeah.
No, we initially we were baking like in our kitchen, so we just lost our kitchen table. We all had to eat like meals and all that.
The dough devastation, yeah, dough can get everywhere. So.
And then just solidifies, like you start getting.
Absolutely.
Yeah. If you miss
black
a piece.
Rock.
Or you put it down the sink and it just blocks the sink.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the first wave when I was just baking out of the brick oven and we hadn't opened the retail space yet, I had a 20 quart Hobart mixer in our kitchen and would start at 4 a.m. mixing doughs to bake that day. And when those Hobarts get going, and it was an old one, so it wasn't super tight, and so you would get this rhythmic little clunk, clunk, clunk as the bowl's moving back and forth, as you're mixing the dough, and our daughter Robin just hated that. Like at four in the morning, she wasn't even in high school yet, and she's getting woken up at 4 a.m. every Friday with this clunk, clunk of the mixer. But yeah, and it's the way you got to do it sometimes to get going. Yeah.
Absolutely. We would find we had an old mixer, which a lovely bakery gave to us, but it was...
We named it Margo. We still got it.
But everything in the room would shake at the same time. Yeah, yeah.
Well, and it looks like you're in a very historic house by the look of the beams and stuff above.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
yes, it does go back quite a long way. So, but still, it's still standing despite
the best of
our mixer. So,
lovely. Yeah. Well, and I'm really curious for you, Alex. Like, your daughter has got this new passion, and is kind of going with it, and you're supporting her and stuff. But it sounds like you really got sort of drawn into the whole thing to the point where. That's your career now too. Mm. Were you pulled in or did you leap in?
It's a good question.
I think button in.
Yeah, this is a good example of how we work.
I think you jumped at the same time I pulled.
Yeah, I think initially, as you know from the story, you know that there wasn't an option because. Kitty was in a very dark place, and it was baking was the one thing that just gave a little glimmer of light.
Yeah.
And therefore, you know, anything that did that, I was going to go along with. And then when things started sort of taking off, I think Kitty actually described it really well. I think I did jump and quite consciously, and I feel I've had this amazing opportunity to just sort of recalibrate my life at a time when I should be thinking about a midlife crisis.
Yeah.
I've ended up baking and learning sourdough instead of going off in an open top sports car and running off with.
It's all right. You've still got time for that. You'll do that next year.
I was gonna say that's the joke here is it's the Mustang convertible. The red Mustang convertible is always the good for you because it's just so nice, I guess, or I'm just happy for you that it worked out that way, that it was something that you kind of gladly went into because it's tough work. Like it can be pretty difficult.
It is, I mean, physically it's very, very sort of demanding. But it's, I really like that, the sort of practical nature and I love working with Kitty and it's opening up.
One more time.
Yeah, go on.
Well, what I've loved is I love the baking. But what Dad's amazing at is he's so good at community. So we are a bakery, but we have so many different events like Glutenbrie, which is like a bread festival. And we'll have like Apple Press Day and we'll have Bacon Butty Sunday and we'll have pizza nights and things like that. So not only are you amazing at being a baker, but I think you're able to really use this incredible like skill of building and creating a community as a small businessman.
Yeah.
Small businessman. Did you get that?
Yeah. But that's okay. That's okay. Like, well, and yeah, because you've got this kind of canvas now, or if not a canvas, it's a, like this facility, at the Scout Hut. And do you still do the pop-up or the shop on High Street as well?
Yeah. So the Scout Hut is where we bake from. Okay. And then...
So you've got these two places that you can leverage in ways that are important to you, and it sounds like that's really what you're doing.
Yeah. Like I say, with this next project that Kitty's evolving, it's going to be really interesting to see where it goes. We don't know where it's going to go, but
I'm going to drag you along with me.
So again, it's really nice not to know the future sometimes.
Reminds me way too much.
Well, and one of the things that I wanted to ask you both was, maybe I'll put it this way. I have a lot of friends that I've talked to on the podcast who struggle in their own ways with mental health. And there are times that the pressure and the anxiety that they're dealing with, that the bakery and the business part of it especially doesn't help with that. And I was really curious because in your case, Kitty, it was baking in the bakery is the thing that sort of opened things up for you. Are there ever times where it becomes a little bit too much for you? Or maybe the bakery isn't the thing that's helping you?
No, that's a brilliant point. So when I first started to really struggle with my mental health, it was very much the bakery that helped. But then when we went into lockdown, we were one of the few places that were able to stay open. And we just went into overdrive. It's like that kind of like that wartime mentality when we're like, oh, we got to feed everyone. So we went to 7 days a week and I completely just burnt myself out. And you're so right, it did. It used to be a brilliant tool to prevent my anxiety and depression, suddenly became a cause for it. And that was a really scary time. But actually, I'm so grateful that that happened because we realized that we had to take a step back and prioritize ourselves and our own sustainability more than this need to people please and feed.
Yeah. So, I mean, what we've ended up doing is actually shaving off the time that we're open. So we only open now 3 days a week. And we have our big prep day on a Wednesday and a bit of pre-prep on Tuesday, but it actually means that we've been able to hold on to sort of the creative side because we found that was the other thing. If you get into too much of a work routine, you stop inventing, you just get into a cycle. And actually a huge part of what we do is just we've got a very indulgent clientele who let us experiment and try out new things. Some work, some don't. You know, we can do that now with our work pattern. So it may not make perfect financial sense, but it's better in a kind of Aesop's fable way, you know, sustainably. We can keep on going with this.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's sounds like you're coming up with a formula that feeds you emotionally and spiritually as well as financially, right? And you've got to get it all in balance because I've talked with folks that have gone the other route and said, okay, the thing that their way of feeding the world is we're going to scale up and we're going to get bigger and I'm going to learn how to be a very good manager and, you know, and that kind of thing. And we're going to systematize everything. And so we can do it at a large scale. It sounds like with your bread kits, it's sort of like, well, here's a way that still in this smaller creative way, you can scale up without breaking your body or turning it into, you know, sort of small scale industry.
Mm. No, you're right. I think that's a really good point because we did used to think a bit like that. Like, okay, we've got to a point, we've run a bakery for 3 years now. Now we need to scale up if we want to feed more people. And actually it's taken a step back and looking at it a bit differently. Not only do we want to like enable people to get good bread, but we also, it's really important to us that we empower them to make it themselves. Yeah. Because the brilliant thing about bread isn't just that it's tasty, but it is brilliant for your mental health. And it is a great skill to know. And we want people to be able to put their own creativity into it. Mm.
Yeah. Well, and I saw a post on Instagram last weekend from a friend of mine that is in Ontario, and she works with, you know, fresh milled flour, and everything is local and organic. And so her food costs are very high. And she was debating, like, why am I making brioche when my cost is $5 a loaf? Like, what can I sell it for? I thought I was here to feed people and make them healthy. And now I'm asking this huge price for my products. And she felt really conflicted about it. Mm-hmm. And I think by teaching, by the make it yourself thing, and you can get the raw ingredients out and teach them, and then folks can make their choices about where do I get my ingredients from when I'm making that second or third loaf, and how, what's, you know, you could ship to Scotland, and then they could after that make it locally there. Exactly. But now they have the skill, right? So
that's our business model. So actually we don't want to be producing these kits in like 10 years time. We just want people
we want to make ourselves redundant.
It's not a good
business model. No.
Well, yeah, but it's a really good creative model, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's the same way. If I'm making the same loaf every single day, I can never do the bread kits. And you already know that if all I do is make the bread kits, I'm never going to do that next thing that gets you excited. So it's sort of, you know.
Yeah.
Is that not going to affect? No, you're so right. Yeah, it's so interesting.
When I worked before my baking career, I used to say, I can do anything for 2 years, right? Like I can sink my teeth into anything for 2 years, but not... but then I'm probably going to want to do another thing, you know? And so...
give yourself the freedom to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Good for you. Good for you. I know it's late, but I wanted to ask you a little bit about the town that you live in. It's Watlington, right?
Mm. Oh, you have fully pronounced it the best anyone's pronounced it.
Oh, good.
Everyone's called it Wadlington.
Oh, I watch a lot of football, so I'm getting used to the language. Yeah. But I was doing some digging around, and you know, it's a smaller community, but it really sounds like the whole community really supports what you're doing. And I'm very curious, what's it like to bake for your community, for your friends and neighbors, and that kind of thing?
That's really interesting. Well, I always say that we never really decided that we were going to open a bakery. Our town kind of decided for us. And it is exactly that. I mean, we moved here when I was 3, so it's all I've ever known. And these people who I'm giving bread to, not only are they my customers, but also I knew them when I was 5. I knew them when I was 10. I remember, like, when I first learned to ride my bike, cycling past their houses. And also I'll know like their cousin's name. I know their dog's names. I know, you know so much about your customers. So it's really lovely. And we have this amazing person in our shop called Katie, and she works at the counter, and she's amazing because she will just know every customer's order the moment they walk through the door.
And it's yeah, we also have this point now where we've been running the shop for 3-4 years, and we've got to see the next generation start to grow up. So, you know, people who've had babies who now have always come to the
babies are now eating our bread.
Yeah. And it's that cycle that of life in a community is very special, and it's we're just very, very lucky. It's a great size, great community, and it's why we exist. Yeah. So on all sorts of levels.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, thanks for sharing that. Our bakery, Orange Boot, was we were in this little strip mall, and there was a daycare right beside us, and then the school was about 2 blocks the other way, and we had these big windows out front, and every day you could see the little kindergarten kids. You'd see the parents bring the kids to the daycare in the morning from the neighborhood, but then they'd all head off to school, and there was one little girl. And she was such a treat. And she started peering in the window going in at, you know, at age 3 and then age 4. And then one day she was going in the other direction because she was heading off to school for the first time. And we stopped everything and, you know, went out and made this big fuss about, you know, that she's going to school. And then her first day of school, you know, we'd always make a big fuss. Oh, you're in grade 1 now, you know, and that kind of thing. And it was just. It was just priceless. And so we did a little thing at the bakery where I think it was the grade 1 class came for a bakery tour. And, you know, we set up the bench and they could round buns and make a mess, and we'd bake them off and stuff. And then we took and that little girl, that was her class. Right. And she came she looked about 6 feet tall because it's like she was telling all of her friends, like, this is my bakery kind of a thing. And it was the most priceless moment. It was the best, you know, because you're in the middle of production, but we're going to do this thing at noon with these kids. And you're sort of like, oh, I don't know. I'm pretty tired, but it was the best. Like it was the absolute best.
We're hoping possibly in the next sort of couple of weeks to, because we had a group of kids from the local school who came in and sort of, you know, learned how to bake with us. But we're seeing if they can actually bake for themselves in the school once a week. So they'll be baking and making focaccia for the rest of the school, this year group, once a week. So it can be added to part of their school dinners. And I think that would be brilliant.
Yeah. And again, bread is one of them things which kids are picky eaters. They're not going to want to eat broccoli. Every kid likes bread.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You can make it. And that the fact that they can make a bit of a mess and it's still something you can eat at the end is a lovely thing. Oh, right on. Fantastic. Well, hey, like, thank you so much for taking the time to chat today.
Thank you.
So good to meet you.
Loved it.
Yeah.
And if your daughter is ever in Oxfordshire, please send her our way.
Well, I'll tell you, I'll send her, and the next time we're out to see her, I'll figure out how to get up there and see you guys, because it's just when Cindy, my wife Cindy, who picked up your book, and she read it, and then it was like, you have to read this. It's like, yeah, okay, yeah, I will. And then it's a couple of days later, she goes, have you read it yet? And I said, okay. And I sat down and I read it, well, in, I think, 2 sittings, because I had to get something to eat in the middle. But it was like, I just devoured that thing. And it for me, and for someone who, for folks who love bakeries like we do, it was just so perfect, because there was so much narrative to it. And you're such good writers and communicators. And then to actually see the recipes with pictures at the end of all the things you were describing was kind of fun. And so it's so neat to actually talk with you as well. And I'm so glad you're
honestly, it's been a real pleasure.
Yeah, and yeah. We would love to one day go up to Canada. Yes. So when we do, we'll
get pull you out up. Here. Yes. Absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
Home of the best wheat in the world.
Absolutely. I'll be
wheat, not weed.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. Actually both, but yes, both. Very yeah. Good wheat. Yes. That was actually down in Portland. I was talking to the person that baked with weed, but that's a whole other show.
Oh, Portland's like weeds and everything.
Absolutely.
That and mushrooms.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, cool. Well, thanks so much. I do appreciate it. And happy baking
you.
Tomorrow.
Honestly, loved
it's
it.
Been great,
yeah.
Thank you very much.
We'll go to bed very happy. Yeah.
Wow, that's a lot of fun. I didn't want to tip you off ahead of time, but if you don't know Kitty and Alex's story, when Kitty started baking, she was 14 years old, and she is now 18 years old. And I wish I was as articulate and skilled as a baker, articulate as a speaker, as good a writer as she is in my 50s. She's nailing it at 18. It's just amazing. So much fun talking to both of them. They're quite the pair, and I really enjoyed the chat. It was very uplifting, and I think they have a really good sense of how they work together and what they want to do and what's going to be sustainable for them. I was glad we got to talk about that this week. So I hope you enjoyed the chat. I will be back with another show next week. Got another like really fun guest. I'm super excited about this talk as well. Coming up next week. Until then, work hard, bake lots, feed the people, get some sleep when you can. Happy baking. Bye-bye.